You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, April 4th. If I sound a little sleepy, it's because I was up way too late last night, flipping between the NCAA championship game and the Breaking Bad marathon going on AMC. I would alternate, but the basketball game, it's at one point, was fairly unwatchable. We've got to do something about officiating. Officiating is killing the game. Too tight are the games being called. Slowing the flow of play last night was sort of the consummation of a trend and a problem we've had in the game now. Really, it's been revealing itself all year. But congratulations to the Tar Heels. If you're a Tar Heel fan, you got your sixth national championship. Kentucky still has eight. Just thought I'd throw that in there. But congratulations to the Tar Heels, who I will say, this is not a vintage North Carolina team. I think it's stretching it even to call it a great team. Even though I know they won the national championship, this is not a team flush with lottery picks. They have a lot of experience. They had that hunger after getting so close last year. And in games, really the last at least three or four, actually I guess you could say the last four or five games of the tournament, eminently losable. But for whatever reason, they found a way. Now, conspiracy theorists out there, of which I sometimes dabble, will say, oh, well, the officiating. Well, yeah, and I understand. Everybody's going to play the play late in the game last night, less than a minute ago, where there was a jump ball, and Kennedy Meeks, who was holding the ball, his right hand was clearly out of bounds. But you got to balance that with the shot from Williams-Goss that went out of bounds, air ball three that the officials decided was tipped by North Carolina. And when they showed the replay, of course, no such tip. And so Gonzaga got the ball again and then hit a three, I think, to pull within one at that point. So, I mean, I didn't think it was necessarily called in a biased way for one team and against another. I thought it was impossible for those teams to get a flow. So congratulations to the Tar Heels. A sad night for Gonzaga, but they'll be fine and they'll be back. And already at least one ESPN writer has put out his way too early top 25 for 2018. And yes, my Kentucky Wildcats number one, so there's that. Too bad they don't give out trophies for that. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about in the program today, not just basketball, though we will do our bracketology drawing today on the program to see who will win a free pizza a week for a year. We'll do that here in just a minute. Why waste time? I think there were 15 people that beat Father Bronner who got better picks than him. Kudos to Eliza Lever. Actually, you could say kudos to father and daughter, because Eliza had the most points in the bracketology contest. Her father, Mark, coming in second. Now, Eliza picked Gonzaga to win the national championship. Her sage old man picked North Carolina. But even by getting those 10 points last night, still fell short of his 14-year-old daughter. So you got that to live with, Mark. Then you go down the line. Alex, who runs the board here, our producer, coming in third, well done, Mr. Head. He did pick the winner as well. Brett, Irvin. Then you go down to Ida, Greg, Noah, and so forth. And so, as I say, what we do with this drawing, you know, just winning the bracket standings doesn't guarantee you the prize, which is a year supply of Little Caesars pizza, one pizza a week for a year. I got a feeling that should Eliza Lever win, since pizza and ballet are not always conducive, her father will be indulging himself, maybe toss a slice to her mother as well. But no guarantee. What the way I do it is, and I've told you this, we've kind of staggered. It's like the NBA lottery. So you do get some benefit from getting the most points. So, for example, Eliza will get, since there's 15 people who beat Father Bronner, she'll get 15 slips of paper with her name on it in the basket, and then 14 for Mark, 13 for Alex, and on down the row like that. And so, now if Eliza does not win the pizza drawing, we do have a consolation prize, and she did get the most points. She will get, should she not win the pizza, she'll get a Breadbox Media tote. It's pretty sweet, actually. So anyway, I'm trying to, do we have any kind of special music in there, Alex? How about our what were you thinking music? Because we haven't done that segment for a while. We have that on there. We got to have some kind of musical interlude. See if we can find it or not. Any luck? We'll give him a second as he pulls that up. But yeah, man, neither team could get separation last night. Did you notice that? I think but you got it? All right, here he's got the music. I'm rummaging my hands. The winner of the 2017 Bracketology with Father Bronner contest is... let's see, I've somehow got a blank one in there. Hold on a second. Is... Alex Head! Congratulations, Alex! A pizza a week for a year. Fantastic. Eliza, your consolation prize will be a free Breadbox Media tote. Congratulations to our winners and for all who participated. Remember, you can't win if you don't play. And we'll put that college basketball season to bed. Some other things I want to talk about. Again, a little bit more on how our choices are our children. Flipping through the catechism at the end of yesterday's show really planted a thought in my mind and has got me thinking. And it actually connected it with the Breaking Bad marathon that was on last night and the Better Call Saul season 2 that I binge watched. And now, of course, they're trying to get you geared up for season 3 of Better Call Saul, the prequel to Breaking Bad. And this whole idea, these shows, I think, Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, both very morally oriented shows. We'll talk about that a little bit, and particularly morality and our choices, our freedom, and consequences of our acts. And also an interesting interview that I read with the executive producer of Breaking Bad and of the Better Call Saul, Vince Gilligan, who was raised Catholic, by the way. Anyway, we'll also talk about happiness as heaven's foretaste. And we'll look at a Pew Research survey about the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, which is the fastest rising religious group, I guess you could say, of any kind, and how it relates to a haunting question from the Gospels. I saw a little bit of disturbing news when I flipped on my laptop this morning and went to abcnews.com. I always want to check and make sure I haven't missed some huge national story, or international story for that matter. And I saw this clip. Teen punches shark to escape attack off Florida coast. And this is actually a young woman, a student, Caitlin Taylor, who's from right down the road from us, where we broadcast from in Louisville, Kentucky, just about 70 miles west-northwest on I-64. She was a student at Louisville Atherton High School. She was swimming in Florida, bitten by a shark, and she punched the shark and was able to get away, but not before she had cuts on her hand and her upper and lower and jaw marks on both legs. It took 120 to 140 stitches. Now, that story, of course, feeds into every shark fear story that there is out there and around spring break, and I have to say, every time I get in the ocean, I at least think about it. But what caught my attention, of course, on this story is that this happened right off the coast of Destin, Florida, where my 15-year-old son is currently there on spring break, invited by one of his buddies from school. So, Ryan, I don't expect you're listening this morning, but I will be calling you later. Please be careful. Man, this is only a 5-foot shark, too. Man, that's a little creepy, I've got to say. But she, you know, you've got to say this for Caitlin Taylor. She, of course, will have, I'm sure, some emotional stuff to work through on this. But I guess on the bright side is she does always have a great story for any party. See, that's always been my thing, you know. As a natural extrovert and one who loves to tell stories, as I've always said, my fantasy is to survive a grizzly bear attack. Not in such shape that I have to eat all my meals through a straw, don't get me wrong. But imagine, I mean, you've got a story. You went mano a mano with the ultimate American beast, and you live to tell about it. I mean, you will be the life of the party for the rest of your life. I'll put shark attack just maybe a tiny notch below, but still quite a bit of cachet. But anyway, scary indeed. Pray for all those who are swimming and on spring break, and you know, who knows how that whole thing went down. Anyway, when we come back, we'll get back into this quote from the Catechism about our moral choices and how they're like our children. I love how, you know, you may have heard Dale Alquist during the break with a Chesterton moment talking about the reality of blame is to pay human beings the ultimate compliment. We are free moral agents, and we're responsible for our choices. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we come back from the break. This is the Mike Allen Show. You are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Again, congratulations to Eliza Lever for getting the highest score in our Bracketology with Father Bronner contest, and she will be getting a pretty nice consolation prize for not winning the drawing, a Breadbox Media tote. And congratulations to Alex Head for winning the drawing and getting free pizza a week for a year from our friends here in the Central Kentucky area where we broadcast from with Little Caesar's Pizza.
Pizza, pizza.
I guess we've got to say that 52 times to really appreciate that prize. So anyway, congratulations. I forgot my question of the day in the first segment. It's in honor of baseball season, which began, well, it actually began Sunday. The traditional opening game is always on Monday and used to always be played by my Cincinnati Reds, who are the oldest professional team in baseball. Anyway, my question is, how many major league ballparks, stadiums have you been to, whether they're still standing or whether they've been replaced, and which is your favorite? We can even throw in there, too, what's your favorite ballpark food, because you can't go to a ballpark without getting the food. And I would say it was a sort of a smoked sausage dog. Big Red Smoky, they're called up at Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati. That goes back to my childhood. But they have a kind of pizza there called La Rosa's Pizza that is just incredible. I mean, when you eat a piece of slice of pizza and the grease, the orangish grease drips down your arm, now that's living. Anyway, so yeah, I've been to the old Riverfront Stadium where the Cincinnati Reds used to play. Never went to Crosley Field, where their home before. I think Riverfront was built when I was 4. My dad used to talk about Crosley all the time. So I've been to Riverfront. I've been to Great American Ballpark. I've been to Turner Field, which is, I don't even know if it's still standing. The Braves have a new stadium this year, I believe. And I've been to the old stadium in Texas where the Rangers used to play before they built the ballpark at Arlington. Is that it? And I've toured Busch Stadium, the current Busch Stadium in St. Louis, though I didn't see a game there. And I guess that's the extent for me. So I haven't been real, I've always dreamed of taking one of those father-son stadium tour trips, and may still happen. Neither of my sons are particularly baseball fans, so that's a problem with the young now. That's why they're trying to speed up the game. And I guess, I wonder if they did any, you know, they don't have to do the actual intentional walk anymore. Isn't that right, Alex? Didn't they, you just have to signal it now? Have they done that already in a major league game? Well, I really don't like that. Yeah, I know. It's not like I'm about to chase somebody off my lawn. But you tell me which stadiums you've been to and which is your favorite. I guess the ones I've been to, I got to say Great American. Especially when you sit behind home plate up a little higher and you look out and see the Ohio River. It's really beautiful. Beautiful place to watch a ball game. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to call or text. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I've been spinning this around in my head since we talked about at the end of yesterday's show. It was actually during Dial of Catechism. See what kind of treasures happen when you flip randomly through this great repository of the faith. It was paragraph 1749, and we were talking about the morality of human acts. And just to read the paragraph again, freedom makes man a moral subject. When he acts deliberately, man is, so to speak, the father of his acts. The father of his acts. And as we talked about a little bit at the end of yesterday's show, that is, I have to say, that's the first time I've ever really thought about our moral choices in those terms. You know, a lot of times we get this idea in our minds that, you know what, yes, I can accept my choices and I'm responsible for my choices. And, you know, nobody else needs to worry about my choices. Just let me make my choices and I'll face up to what comes. But the truth about in life is, and we've probably all learned this, is that some of the choices that we make take on, in a sense, a life of their own. Because we cannot always foresee how those things are going to play out and the implications they'll have not only in our lives, but in the lives of others. This is how we can help make sense a little bit, I think, of the sacrament of reconciliation, and particularly the understanding from a Catholic perspective of penance. I think there are a lot of evangelical Christians or a lot of non-Catholic Christians who really misunderstand Catholicism and forgiveness and penance and all the rest. And there is a misconception that, you know, Catholics don't believe somehow that Jesus' mercy is sufficient, that Catholics are always having to do these works of mortification and penance to make up for their acts, when shouldn't they know Jesus said it is finished on the cross, he paid the debt, and so forth. And it really is a simplified caricature of the Catholic position. Because where I would challenge the position that it's all simply about the forgiveness of the guilt of our sin, the individual culpability we have, that sin has what we call in the Catholic faith temporal consequences as well. Now, the ultimate one we sin against is the Lord himself. And so we have, and because God himself is eternal, there is an eternal consequence to our sin. Only Jesus in his grace can forgive the eternal consequences of our sin. There's no penance we can do because we are finite creatures. There's no penance we could ever do. Restoration, no recompense that we could pay as finite creatures for an infinite offense. But every sin also brings with it a temporal consequence. Now, the analogy that is sometimes used is if a baseball gets thrown through your window by a neighboring kid, Now, and let's say that he did it with malice or through a rock, let's just say. And you know who did it. You saw him, in fact, from your upstairs bedroom window. And you go next door, and to your surprise, the kid is remorseful. He tells you, yes, I don't know what I was thinking. It was a bad decision. Will you forgive me? Well, you have power in that moment as the one sinned against to grant him forgiveness for the guilt of that thrown rock. However, something still has to be done about the window. Still has to be fixed. And heaven help if there had been somebody on the other side of that window. Maybe a child playing in a room. Whatever. There are implications to the act that ripple out throughout the universe. Now, we're not talking about karma per se, though the Eastern religion idea of karma is not entirely false, because we do live in a moral universe in which our decisions, as it says here, we become the father, we become the sire of our acts. And once, just like with parenthood, once you've brought your child into the world, and that child grows and becomes their own person, which they inevitably will, our control diminishes into who that child will become. We certainly pray, we guide, we steer, we do all those things, teach, train, all the rest. But ultimately, that child becomes their own free moral agent. So if you take that analogy that the Catechism uses to our own moral acts and the implications and the temporal consequences and all the rest that play out when we make choices, then yes, penance is crucial. We do what penance we can to address the temporal consequence for the rippling impact of our actions. You know, and as I told you earlier, I was flipping around last night. Love that little button on the remote that can just take you back to the last channel you were at. So I could flip back and forth between the game that was unfolding and unfolded just as I thought it would, with North Carolina winning. Flipping between that and the Breaking Bad marathon. Now, they're doing the Breaking Bad marathon in anticipation of Monday's debut of season 3 of Better Call Saul on AMC. Better Call Saul, the prequel to Breaking Bad. And as I've said before, there have only been two shows I've ever binge-watched. My children are pros at this, but only two that I've binge-watched, even though my daughter yesterday told me what I did doesn't really qualify as binge-watching. Got to watch a lot more. But then they are Breaking Bad, and its prequel, Better Call Saul. The shows, I think, are amazing, tell an amazing story. Not a cheerful story, a very dark story about the potential for human behavior and particularly for darkness in the human heart. Now, what they have in common, the two shows, is they have the same executive producer, a guy by the name of Vince Gilligan. And I was fascinated as I was watching the Breaking Bad marathon last night. Something, they had these little segments in between episodes, interviews with the producer, the actors, and so forth. Something Vince Gilligan said that got me wondering about him. It's pretty amazing what I found, particularly related to the moral dimension of these two shows. So we'll be back with that in just a minute. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
We're
We're right at the bottom of the hour back on the Mike Allen Show. Want to learn more about what we do here on Breadbox Media? Go to breadboxmedia.com. You can check out other shows, those on the weekends, those that are daily, through contributors around the country, actually. You can also find out why we do what we do, very important, and also become a friend of your favorite show, hint, hint, wink, wink, and support it through a monthly contribution and really help out what we're trying to do here at Breadbox Media. So check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Again, my question of the day, how many baseball stadiums, major leagues, have you been to here to honor the beginning of baseball season? And that can be a current stadium or past stadium, and which is your favorite? A couple comments on Facebook we've gotten. Shannon says Busch Stadium in St. Louis and Red Stadium in Cincinnati, her favorite Busch Stadium. Now, Busch Stadium is a nice facility. It's, of course, tainted by the fact that the Evil Empire plays there, but just saying. Alex says Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, Wrigley Field, Fenway Park, his favorite Fenway. Oh, Fenway Park. Wow. So you've been to Fenway Park, you've been to San Antonio, Alex, to see the Spurs and the Warriors play, and now you get free pizza a week for a year. Wow. Anyway, congratulations to Alex, and also congratulations to Eliza Lever for getting the highest point total in the bracketology contest. Her consolation prize, though it's pretty sweet, is a free Breadbox Media tote, which has a ballet person she'll probably appreciate more than gooey cheese and pepperoni for a year. Anyway, so if you want to chime in on the question of the day or anything else we've talked about, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Today, a very unfortunate anniversary, 49 years ago today, in the early morning of April 4th, 1968, on a hotel balcony in Memphis, Tennessee, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed of an assassin's bullet fired by James Earl Ray. We talk about choices, their implications, and how our choices as free moral agents become our children. It's a staggering thing to think about the ripple effect of that one act of evil. And who knows how alone James Earl Ray acted, but I guess next year will be the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's death. I'm sure there'll be a lot of commemorations about that. Continue to pray for the repose of his soul and for all those who knew and loved him, for sure. And also just for our own increasing understanding that every human person is made in the image and likeness of God. Anyway, as I said, I was watching the Breaking Bad marathon last night. Well, flipping between that and the NCAA championship game. And they had these little segments in between shows where they would talk to the executive producer, Vince Gilligan, and some of the actors. As I told you, Breaking Bad, produced by the same person as Better Call Saul. Two fantastic shows. Season 3 of Better Call Saul starting next week. But I saw, when you watch Breaking Bad, if you've not seen it, you know the basic premise. Hopefully, by now. The premise is this run-of-the-mill, very ordinary guy, New Mexico chemistry teacher, Walter White, played by Bryan Cranston, receives a diagnosis of a cancer. It's very dark prognosis. And because he realizes and feels this sense of unfulfillment in his life, of dreams unfulfilled, he wants to leave his pregnant wife and son, financial stability after he's gone. And so he happens on a ride along with his brother-in-law, who happens to be a drug enforcement agent, to happen upon a young man who is escaping a bust that only Walter White sees escape, and that is Jesse Pinkman, his former student, who he flunked. And Walter White gets this crazy idea that what if he and Jesse Pinkman teamed up just to make enough money to leave his family cared for, to cook up crystal meth and to sell it. And of course, they end up, Walter White, putting his chemistry skills to work. It turns out he's a brilliant chemist and makes the most pure, pristine crystal meth in the American Southwest.
And one of the things that Vince Gilligan, the producer, said that he wanted to portray in the show is the concept of the idea. He said, there's always been the unwritten rule of television that with the television series, you can do whatever you want, just make sure the main character always stays the same. Sort of like the main character is the anchor, the North Star of the show that everything else revolves around. But he decided to flip that on its ear. And so what he portrays in this show is the concept of, over time, the protagonist becoming the antagonist. The main character becoming someone overwhelmed with the gravity and the darkness of the choices that he has made. I couldn't help but start putting all this together in my mind, what we read at the end of the catechism yesterday about we become the father of our moral acts, and they take on in many ways a life of their own. You see that very much in Breaking Bad. You also see this in Better Call Saul, because what the attorney Jimmy McGill, who will later take on his alias Saul Goodman, he plunges into a darkness perhaps not quite as violent as Walter White's, into the world of the drug running in the Southwest and across the Mexican border. But what Jimmy McGill, the attorney, falls into through the best of intentions is his own morally compromised trajectory that impacts not just him, but many, many others. So it got me fascinated because Gilligan, there we go. Not the country singer. Vince Gilligan was talking about, if you watch Breaking Bad, there are very few morally redeeming characters in it, but there are a couple. And one of them is a very flawed person, Jesse Pinkman, played by Aaron Paul. He's a guy that really has no business, even less business than Walter White, in becoming a drug kingpin. He hates violence. He has a conscience. And in fact, whereas Walter White successfully largely mutes his conscience, Jesse can't. But there's this one incident that happens in which Jesse Pinkman is called upon to have to commit an act of violence, or chooses to commit an act of violence that goes so against the grain of who he is. And Vince Gilligan said, I worried when we started developing this story, what would this act do to the soul of Jesse Pinkman? And I thought, man, here's an executive producer in Hollywood talking about the soul. I've got to read a little bit more about him, because when you watch both Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, they are not amoral universes. In fact, these universes that they live in are rife with moral gravity. And so when I read the Wikipedia page for Vince Gilligan, it said in an interview in 2011, Gilligan stated that he was raised Catholic, bada bing. I love how people say that sort of thing. And people in sort of elite Hollywood circles, I'm sure, say it all the time. I'm a recovering Catholic. But run from it as you will, you cannot escape its mark upon you. Anyway, he goes on to say, I'm pretty much agnostic at this point in my life, but I find atheism just as hard to get my head around as I find fundamental Christianity. Because if there is no such thing as cosmic justice, he says, what is the point of being good? He further stated his philosophy as, and this is an interview that he did with the New York Times magazine. He said this, I feel some sort of need for biblical atonement or justice or something. I like to believe there is some comeuppance, that karma kicks in at some point, even if it takes years or decades to happen. My girlfriend says this great thing that's become my philosophy as well. Vince Gilligan says, quote, I want to believe there's a heaven, but I can't not believe there's a hell. Now that's fascinating. You know, you take polls of the American public. The percentage of people who believe in heaven has a significant lead on the percentage of people who believe in hell. We don't want to believe in hell. We don't want to believe in eternal, a negative eternal consequence. Does something to our sensibilities in this therapeutic generation, a generation in which we all want to feel good about ourselves or have to believe that in the end we're all okay. But according to Vince Gilligan, he finds it easier to believe in hell, or at least to hope for hell, than there is for heaven, because this is a guy who's seriously attuned to the realities of evil in this world and that we live in a moral universe, and there has to be some consequence for that. He said the idea of Idi Amin living out the last 25 years of his life in Saudi Arabia with no consequence eats him up inside. Pick up more on this on the other side of the break. We'll kind of flip it on its ear. This whole idea of ultimate consequences of hell, also of heaven, when we come back. This is the Mike Allen Show. You are listening to Breadbox Media. If you've got a comment, 573-4BREAD-4, call or text or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Again, our question of the day in honor of the beginning of baseball season, which my Reds most fittingly lost their first game. So they're already like a game out of first, I guess. not surprising. They'd probably be the closest they're come to first all year long. But I digress. What is your, how many baseball stadiums, Major League Baseball stadiums have you been to? And which is your favorite? And that can be current stadiums or past stadiums. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Anyway, back to all this about our moral choices, that we become the father of our moral acts. We're a moral subject, as the Catechism says. Pretty powerful stuff when you really start to think about it. Should really give us pause when we commit our moral acts, because nothing is ever as simple as we think, and the implications of our acts are never as contained as we think. You know, you've always heard that old story of the priest who wanted to teach somebody about gossip, and so took them up to the top of the church and basically, it was a kind of a windy day, and threw a whole ream of paper off the top of the church and said, your penance is to go and to retrieve every one of those pieces of paper. The point being, this is what gossip is. One word. Loose lips don't just sink ships, they destroy lives. Because once you've spoken that word and it leaves your mouth, it's now your child, and you have limited control. So it's sort of the idea. And that's the idea, as I said, I think that Vince Gilligan, the executive producer of both Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, as somebody who is raised Catholic, no longer practices his faith, but cannot embrace atheism, he says, it's as hard to get his head around as fundamental Christianity, because if there's no such thing as cosmic justice, what is the point of being good? Wow. You know, sometimes you'll run across those people, they'll say things like, well, you know, even if there wasn't a God, to me, goodness is its own reward. Well, in some ways, I would say yes, but I would say more than likely you've lived a pretty sheltered life of privilege. If you've never felt the bitter sting of what injustice is, and if there is ultimately no consequence for the choices that we make, then try to, you tell me, if we're just blips, freak accidents of certain chemical combinations in the universe destined to forget us, in which we will be ultimately annihilated, all of us, when our star runs out of energy. I mean, what's the point? So you got to appreciate that. And that gives me hope for a guy like Vince Gilligan, a guy who sees the universe in such stark moral time, so the moral category. So pray for him. Somebody else to pray for is a woman by the name of Joanna Goddard. She writes an excellent blog called A Cup of Joe. Well, I say excellent. I oftentimes find myself arguing internally with her. She is a New York City-based, I would say, pretty hard left-leaning secular feminist. Not, again, not that there's not some truth in the things that she embraces. Of course, I happen to believe Christianity, it is most authentic, is thoroughly feminist in the best sense of the word. But it's interesting. I go to her blog just because, you know, it gives me a taste. If we complain here in middle America that the coasts are out of touch, then we can't be out of touch either and understand what are the things important to folks who maybe don't share our own faith commitments, even our own particular moral values or compass. But she's a mom. She blogs at This Cup of Joe. But she's every once in a while drifts over into some pretty existential reflection, which again gives me hope for anybody who's willing to not just drown their existential questions in the distractions that are so numerous that this world offers. She talks about this whole notion of happiness. She writes a fairly self-revelatory, limitedly, though. She doesn't go into the details, just saying that her and her husband have been experiencing some struggles that have been disorienting and emotional and hard to navigate, something they're dealing with as parents, and she doesn't go into the details. But she talks about how do you deal with these struggles in life that we all have, despite our appearances on social media as having it all together. And she refers to an article that she had read, and I came across this article myself a few months ago. It was by Google's former happiness guru. Now, there's a job description. It was about thin slices of joy, a guy by the name of Chade Ming Tan, who explains his philosophy that happiness doesn't have to be a constant overarching feeling. It can come as sweet, short moments throughout your day. He goes on to talk about these thin slices of joy and how we need to delight in those. For example, right now I'm a little thirsty, he says, so I will drink a bit of water. And when I do that, I experience a thin slice of joy, both in space and time. It's not like, yay, it's like, oh, it's kind of nice. Usually these events are unremarkable. A bite of food, the sensation of stepping from a hot room to an air-conditioned room, the moment of connection and receiving a text from an old friend. And so she goes on to say these are the kind of things that she counts on to help get her through. She said, this is what life's all about. What are your thin slices of joy these days? Sending a big hug to everyone, and thank you so much for reading and understanding. Now, she's on to something there, but it's not quite enough. But hopefully she's on the road to get there, because those little thin slices of joy are real. Those slices of happiness, they are real, and they tap into something deep into every human person. I love how the Catechism talks about our vocation to beatitude, that we were made for happiness. And that desire for happiness in us is a good thing. It's planted there. In fact, the Catechism says God has placed it in the human heart in order to draw man to the one who alone can fulfill us. The problem becomes is when we substitute these temporal slices of happiness in our lives, when we make them the end of everything, and we don't realize they're simply signposts pointing us to the ultimate beatitude and happiness that can only be found eternally and ultimately in God. This is a great quote from C.S. Lewis, I always love, from his book Mere Christianity. If I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. To somehow take these thin slices of joy we experience and make that the sum total of what happiness is would be akin to taking your family on a trip to Florida, stopping at the Welcome to Florida sign, and we used to do that when I was a kid. Don't lots of people do that? Get your photo taken in front of the Welcome to Florida sign. What if you were to take your family there, take your photo at the Welcome to Florida sign, say, okay, kids, let's go. Let's go back home. Mission accomplished. I mean, this is Florida. No, the sign. This is the sign, Dad. Florida's so much more. That's got, I think, a pretty good analogy for the way we live our lives. Our temptation is always to take the lesser thing. It's not that the desire for that thing and for those thin slices of joy are bad. It's good. But let us never forget that desire for happiness plants in us a thirst and points us to something ultimate. It's almost like the converse of what Vince Gilligan talked about. These little aspects of cosmic justice that we see in the lives that we live should point us to the reality that there's an ultimate cosmic consequence for our acts. And on the flip side, these thin slices of joy remind us of the heaven to which we should aspire. Obviously, we're out of time, and we'll get into more of this tomorrow. Let's spin up the Dollar Catechism wheel. We got about a minute and a half left. 2,865 paragraphs of truth. Not randomly collected, but everything is always integrated. But let's see what Providence has in store. 2781. Wow, we're going toward the back into the section on prayer. When we pray to the Father, we are in communion with Him and with His Son, Jesus Christ. Then we know and recognize Him with an ever new sense of wonder. The first phrase of the Our Father is a blessing of adoration before it is a supplication, for it is the glory of God that we should recognize Him as Father and true God. We give Him thanks for having revealed His name to us, for the gift of believing in it, and for the indwelling of His presence in us. Maybe pause there when you pray the Our Father. Just on those first two words. Our Father, the fatherhood of God, His name as Father, to which Jesus so shocked His hearers by referring to God in such intimate terms. Not only do we have the privilege of calling Him Father, but our Father, meaning our communion with each other, but also our communion with the Son. His Father is our Father. It's worth thinking about, particularly the incredible thing Jesus said, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. We are drawn in. By God's grace, I'll be back with you tomorrow. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.